What about prevention? Can you go through that?
That's the easiest thing to do, but it's going to take the most education. If there's a message I'd want to give to the oncologist is that when you do recognize somebody, any patient who you feel requires a bisphosphonate that has metastatic disease, refer them right away to a dentist who is familiar with this. Probably start with the oral and maxillofacial surgeon who can direct the care. And so the message there is to the oncologist is don't be intimidated by this ONJ stuff that you don't give the patient a valuable drug called zomedoneridia. Number two, but also refer them to a dentist who is familiar with this. And we asked the dentist, here's what we want you to do. The medical oncologist, if you can, defer your bisphosphonate for about 2 months, which is physiologically feasible. From cancer kinetics, I think that's not asking anything that's inappropriate. The dentist needs to begin right away to do one fundamental thing. Take care of the mouth to avoid dental extractions or dental implants later on. And so what they need to do is to get the mouth in optimum health. So I tell the dentist or the oral surgeon, give everybody a thorough examination. Take out any teeth that are abscessed, not restorable, failing root canals. To do all of the invasive work while the bone is capable of healing through a remodeling process. And then begin preventative dentistry. In other words, crowns, bridges, dentures, fillings are feasible anytime during the bisphosphonate exposure because that's not invasive.
What about doing this type of work while patients are on chemotherapy?
Not too much of a problem. With chemotherapy does affect healing, but the mouth is gifted with a blood supply and immune response that generally handles that pretty well.
Do you try to sort of avoid periods of low white counts or give growth factors when this type of work is being done?
Yeah, somebody who's on chemotherapy, and that's why I think the oral and maxillofacial surgeon is probably the center point who understands this. Yes, if somebody's in the middle of chemotherapy, we do want to take our blood tests. And if somebody is nadiring down to a really low white count, you want to defer that until they're into a period where their white count is at least 3,000. We often use platelet-rich plasma to help healing and other growth factors to help your healing process.
I've mentioned to you before, we do a lot of patterns of care studies of oncologists, and we've never asked these questions. I'd like to. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Alan Lipton about trying to see what oncologists are doing, but I'm going to bet what you just described in terms of prevention and holding off on the bisphosphonates for 2 months and sending the patient for this work, et cetera, I'm going to bet that it's not done that much.
No, it isn't done. Right now, that is the challenge. There's an educational requirement out there. Not only to my dental colleagues, and I have to address myself, my oral surgery colleagues, and the general dentistry colleagues, which are much more numerous, because they see the patients first many times, and how to recognize it, how to educate their patients, and then what to do with these people. And then, of course, the medical oncologist who, one, as I've said, recognize that there is a risk factor, how to refer them to a dentist. Number three, not be intimidated by the spectrum of ONJ to go ahead and treat these patients. Because the dental community's message to the medical oncologists is treat these patients as you always would, but let us take care of the mouth situation. We can handle that. We have protocols that we can deal with it and manage it because you can deal with exposed bone in the mouth. You can't deal with runaway cancer.
Do the NCCN guidelines incorporate what you just described?
Not to my knowledge, simply because this is all very new. This is something that was never known before 2003. Met resistance until probably late 2005. So now we're into a year where it's been recognized as a real entity. And typically what's happened is that lawyers have entered into the scheme and mixed this up. The drug companies are in a protective mode because they're being challenged by attorneys and patients with lawsuits.
Wow.
And so they're not too free with some information. And so it's complicated, the issue. But the basic message is there are some positive things you should do with a patient before they start a bisphosphonate, while they're on it, and then when they get exposed bone. So there's three time frames that we are concerned about.
The recommendations that you just described, are those your individual thoughts, or does that represent sort of the oral surgery community in general?
They represent the oral surgery community in general. My parent organization, the American Association of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgeons, has published a position guideline paper that includes most of this. And eight other specialties of dentistry have their own position papers that mimic pretty much what I've just said.
Fascinating. What about the manpower? Is it out there? I mean, we're talking about a lot of patients who would require an awful lot of work the way you just described it, I would assume. I don't know what the number is. I'm sure tens of thousands of people.
Well, if you assume a 10% incidence of this occurring, and probably it'll increase as more people are using these drugs, and you're maybe 500,000 people in the United States, I believe, have been estimated to take either Zometa or Ritia.
500,000 cancer patients?
Cancer patients are receiving those.
Wow.
So 10% of 500,000. However, yes, there's plenty of dentists out there. The real problem is educating them to also be not intimidated by these patients.